What's going on, everybody? Welcome into episode 23 of Lobbing Scorchers. This is Ari Lilienwall, and I'm joined virtually today by producer Noah. Noah, say what's up to the people.
We put Ari in the quarantine box. He was too sick to come out, and so we stuck him in his basement, plugged in 14,000 cables, and we're here.
It's been a heck of a week for me, folks. It hasn't been my finest hour. I've had the flu all week. It's been tough. But I'm feeling well enough today to lay this episode down. So we're going to let it rip. Man, we just had a huge battle with technology to get this set up. But I'm pretty proud of us for getting this functional. I'm hoping the audio all sounds good. But I think we're cooking. And we're ready for a good one today. This is going to be there's a lot of novelty to this episode. We're going to talk about the Seattle Sounders' riveting road match against the Philadelphia Union at Subaru Park, which, you know, this is one of the more fascinating matches you're ever going to see, a true chess match on the field. Just a lot to dive into on the tactical battle that took place at Subaru Park. So we're going to get into all the nuts and bolts of that. I can't wait for that. And then I think we're going to keep the same format that we've been rocking with. After we're done with our Sounders takeaways, we'll hit some winners and losers from the rest of the results that took place in MLS yesterday. And then we're going to get out of here, and that'll be it for episode 23. But before we do that, I wanted to hit a little bit on while I was out sick. Noah did a really great interview with PSRA President Peter Manikowski, who is gracious enough to give us his time to talk about the ongoing labor dispute between the PSRA and Pro and MLS. And a lot of really good stuff in there, Noah. I thought Peter gave a great breakdown of the PSRA's perspective. You asked him some good questions. And, you know, I mean, I can just kind of give my takeaways after listening to it, if that's all right.
I'd love to hear
it. Which is that, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a labor expert. I don't pretend to know the fine points of these things. But I do think it's an example of a situation that gets made more complicated than it needs to be. To me, this is very simple. The solution to this problem is very easy. And that's pay the refs.
Pay them.
You know, I thought Peter really hit on it, which is that they're not really asking for anything unreasonable. They just want, you know, basic travel accommodations, good pay, to be treated well for the work that they do, which is really important work. You know, we all want the standard of officiating for the league to be high. And whatever you want to say about the job that pro referees do, I think it's been pretty clear from watching the replacement referees that they might do a little bit better of a job than people give them credit for. So I know refs are a punching bag a lot, but, you know, I just really want to voice my support for what they're fighting for, because it's not unreasonable and it could easily be given. That's kind of the thing about it to me, is like, If anyone's contending that these are impossible or unreasonable demands, that's just not the case. And so I thought your interview did a good job of highlighting that. And I thought Peter had a lot of really good things to say on that topic.
Yeah, no, he was a great interview. Very, very thankful that he took time out of his busy schedule to chat with us. You know, I think the biggest takeaway for me was just the fact that, you know, these are very basic things that have already been accommodated for players and, you know, other staff within MLS. And, you know, if you want good quality officiating, you should probably keep the standard of quality of life up for officials as well. And also, I think it's quite embarrassing that Major League Soccer is essentially throwing a temper tantrum and giving the finger to its best officials over what amounts to 25 cents per ticket sold. So that's pretty funny to me.
Agreed on that point.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really encourage everyone to go listen to that interview with Peter Manikowski for episode 22 of Lobbing Scorchers. Good stuff. It was about a 30-minute interview, Noah. So, yeah. And it really it dove into it more than I could effectively recap the nuts and bolts of it. You know, that's a guy who knows the ins and outs. So good informative stuff there. Noah, why don't we go ahead and just dive into this Sounders Philly game, because
there's so much to take away from this game.
This already was a spectacle. Yeah. You know, if you're listening to Lobbing Scorchers, you probably already saw what happened. but this game took place in an absolute torrential rainstorm / monsoon out in Chester, Pennsylvania. So I didn't realize how bad the elements were until like a few minutes before kickoff. I hadn't really been paying attention. I pulled up the match feed like 5 minutes before the game started, and kind of that's when I realized the extent of it. And everyone's walking out there. The field is totally just soaked,
drenched,
and you know, it kind of, the whole vibe felt like, is this really going to happen? Are we doing this? Okay, it looks like we're doing this. And the game kicks off, and it's just an abject disaster. But like, the thing about trying to play soccer when the field is that wet is, you know, you can't pass or combine or anything like you normally would.
The ball is floating on the turf, literally.
Exactly. And like, you know, you try and pass to somebody and the ball just comes to a dead stop. Like, you can't lead anybody or anything like that. So it basically becomes just hoofing the ball as far forward as you can, back and forth, which is not really soccer.
No.
And you know, guys were Charlie Brown slipping on the field. And about 5 minutes into the game, the referee, and I think most of the players, realized that this was a pretty untenable situation.
Yeah.
It didn't surprise me that they delayed the game at that point. I thought that was the right thing. But what I didn't understand is why they stood there for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, they were just standing out in the pouring rain for like 15, 20 minutes.
And it seemed like he was like asking the players their opinion on if they should keep going. And
he's like, you guys want to play? Or like,
you guys want to do this? And then, you know, it seems like some guys were like, yeah, no, we want to play, but I don't know. I got the vibe from looking at the broadcast that a few of the guys were like, this is impossible. Yeah. We can't do this.
My favorite was when the ref picked the ball up, and this was probably like 10 minutes into them just like standing around. He just he has the ball in his hands. He just looks at the ground, drops it. It doesn't move. It just sticks into the turf, and he just shakes his head and shrugs. And I was like, I mean, that's basically exactly how this game.
Needless to say, they ended up calling the game, which was not a surprise to me. But I think the funniest part about this is that, you know, we talked about how LAFC and Real Salt Lake played in similar conditions to this last match day, but it was snow instead of rain. And they went ahead and they played that entire game. And we talked in great detail about Steve Cherundolo's reaction to that, which was, he was not pleased.
And he got fined for that.
He got fined $10,000 for his reaction to that. But like, I don't really understand how you cancel this game, but not that game. Like, to be fair to Steve C.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really see the consistency with that. It makes total sense to have canceled this game. But I mean, isn't snow just as bad, if not worse, than what we saw in this game?
It's definitely a little bit more playable in my own experience, but it's not by much. Like, it's still pretty bad.
Especially in that situation where it was snowing so hard, where it was accumulating like multiple inches at a time on the field. It didn't seem much more tenable to me. So anyway, I think that's funny.
Yeah, it's a good bit.
It adds some comedic value to what we were talking about last week with how LAFC were talking about how they got jobbed, and then the Sounders game gets canceled this week.
It was a good bit.
It was definitely the other good content, I thought, was the guys with the mops.
Yeah,
the mop. So the mop guys, I think they were out there before the game, obviously, like trying to clear it off. But obviously, it was still raining the whole time. So it just got soaked again immediately. And then during the initial delay, which was, it was originally dubbed just a delay. And they were, it seemed like they might've had the intent of restarting the game if they could get the field cleared off. So the guys with the mops are out there, they're scrubbing it. But I don't, I kind of felt like I was taking crazy pills watching that. It's still raining. It's still raining just as hard. So you're clearing it off and it's just going to get the same amount, exact same amount of soaked again immediately because it's still a torrential downpour. So I don't know if there's anything to trying to get the field cleared off to like just to maybe save the condition of it more long term than trying to restart the game. That could be the case, but it just didn't feel like they were. The mop guys were, they were fighting a losing battle right there.
I think for moving the water around, the biggest thing is like there's specific drainage points that are better in certain parts of the field. So like it was all congregating kind of towards the middle. And so like getting it, moving it out to the outside. So it'll at least spread it around and it should theoretically drain faster, but you're right. It's like, flooding, it's not going to change.
That's what I was going to say. It was going to keep raining the same amount all night. It was one, literally, if you looked at the weather, it was 100% precipitation.
So one of the Philadelphia Union beat reporters, Jose Roberto Nunez, who shout out, great reporter, he spoke with like four or five different turf management people with like huge experience, and they were saying that turf in February and March doesn't move water well as compared to like May through September. And because it had rained earlier in the day and the week, the soil was already so saturated, it was like impossible for it to drain. And then also that a source shared with him at 7 p.m., it was communicated that the field was playable. And between kickoff and 5 minutes, things deteriorated so quickly with like the root zone, which is, I guess, how they move the water in between like the sand and the dirt. It was so bad. It just like basically backed up and was impossible to drain anything.
Right. Awesome. So, yeah, great game. Obviously, nothing to take away from this, unfortunately. You know, I was looking forward to seeing how it went, to seeing if the team could score multiple goals, but unfortunately we got no data points from this in that respect. But you know, I did figure, Noah, that there was one aspect of this that we could talk about from the soccer perspective, which is just our reaction to the starting lineup, which they came out in the same 4-4-2 that they came out with against Austin FC. I know you were none too happy about that. I mean, we were talking about on the last episode about a lot of radical changes that we would like to see just to start to throw some curveballs, try something different, see if you can spark an offense that's been stuck in neutral for much of the past calendar year. I've been feeling like I'm ready to see something like that. I know you've been feeling like that even more so than I have.
Absolutely.
You were tweeting out some lineup graphics last night where
I was taking the piss a little bit.
Yeah. I know, and I definitely get that.
I mean, I'll give you my lineup that I settled on here. It's pretty fire, I gotta say. It's called the S lineup. For those who didn't see it on Twitter, it's got Morris on the right wing, Paul Rothrock in a false nine with Musovski as the true nine, Leo Chu on the outside. He's only playing so he pulls his hamstring. So that was just, you know, that's just a little wrinkle in there. And then we got Josh Atencio, Christian Roldan holding down the midfield, Alex Roldan on the outside right, Reagan and Javi holding it down on that back line, and then on the left, Cody Bakes and Andrew Tomas in goal. So I'm just saying, I could have beat Austin with that lineup. My take.
I mean, that's a little more radical than I might go. I think the point I was trying to make on the last episode is that I want to see something different on the left side of the attack, primarily, first and foremost, rather than blow up the entire 11. But I definitely wasn't surprised to see the 4-4-2, but I think in general, like my desire for it, for change is less related to formation,
yes,
and more related to personnel. So like the notion that the 4-4-2 already was a new wrinkle, which so I'm kind of diving in here. You had a little back forth with our friend Jeremiah O'Shan at Sounder at Heart.
Shout out
Jeremiah, shout out Sounder at Heart. You know, nothing adversarial, just a good, just a nice little tactical debate. But he was kind of taking issue with the notion that we raised on the last episode, that the team had kind of been banging their head against the wall, doing the same thing over and over, when, you know, you could argue that the 4-4-2 that they've come out with these last two games is a bit of a new wrinkle. Jordan Morris and Raul Ruiz Diaz have not played as dual strikers very much. And so I understand that argument, but like I said, like formational tweak isn't really what I'm talking about. Like when you have the left side of Nuhu and Leo Chu with Jordan at the nine, that's just a look that I feel like I've seen regardless of if you have the dual striker look with Raul, or you run the 4-2-3-1 with Jordan by himself up top or whatever. You could run that with Raul up top too. That's just all stuff that I feel like we've seen struggle to score multiple goals in MLS games a lot over a pretty big sample size now. So, you know, if people think that the 4-4-2 is enough, I guess it's, you know, it's TBD. We don't have a big enough sample size on it, but I'm at the point where, based on what I've seen dating back to last season with the look like this, I've become radicalized on Paul Rothrock, and I don't think that makes me wrong, you know.
No, I don't.
I stand by what I said about Paul Rothrock. Is it radical? Yeah, but you know, these are radical times.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I kind of described it in the O'Shan conversation with changing parking spots in a shitty car doesn't make it a better car. You know what I mean? It's like, if there's issues with Nuhu and Leo Chu in the way that they're playing, shifting them into a slightly different formation isn't going to change their output. You know what I mean? I don't mind a 4-4-2. I mean, I guess we're playing elementary school football, but you know, I appreciate it. And if it's effective with the dual strikers, once we get back, you know, Rusnak and JP, fuck, sounds good to me. Score some goals.
You know,
I don't care.
Maybe we should be more open minded and give the 4-4-2 more of a chance. Maybe we're just cynical and jaded. I'm open to that possibility, and you know, I'm willing to be proven wrong on all of this. If they go out there in the 4-4-2 and they start cooking and this offense starts meaningfully generating high quality chances consistently in scoring multiple goals in MLS games, I'm happy to take that out, you know?
And to be fair,
I'm just going based off what I've seen dating back to last March. Is that when the Charlotte FC game we were talking about was?
And that sounds about right. I won't quote you on it though.
The it was March or April. Yeah. So I mean,
it was a while ago.
In my opinion, this offense has been stuck in neutral pretty much since that time. And if it takes Paul Rothrock, not to belabor the Paul Rothrock point, mm-hmm. but
or Musovsky.
It's less about Paul Rothrock, honestly. Like it's more about just trying something new if what you have been trying isn't working. And, you know, maybe I'm not giving enough credence to the 4-4-2 with that. But either way, it seems like that's what they're going to try until they get João Paulo and Rusnak back. And I think, you know, we can talk about Paul Rothrock, Cody Baker, and all the other, what your S lineup all day. But I do think there is an ultimate reality where if you don't have João Paulo and Albert Rusnak, your ceiling is inherently capped. And like, I do acknowledge too, like a lineup that's has Paul Rothrock and Cody Baker in it over a large sample size, I don't know that there's like huge odds that that's going to average more points per game than what they've been running over the last year. In fact, I would think the most likely range of outcome there is that that ends up averaging fewer points per game. But I would like I would like to find out just for the intrigue. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I feel like I already know what the ceiling is with option A. So I would like the intrigue of option B, but that's just me. You know, I don't think anyone's necessarily wrong for looking at it differently, because your hands are tied with personnel in this situation. And it's unfortunate that we have to talk about that every week. It's unfortunate that we had to talk about that every week last year with Christian and Raul missing all the time that they did. One thing I was going to say about, that I forgot to mention about the Philly game, though, if I could go back real quick, low key, not even low key, high key, Raul almost scored.
Oh, Raul scored. He would have scored. I was going to say, first of all,
if it wasn't raining, he probably would have scored that, I think.
Or hit the post.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be a high percentage
XG,
look, especially for him.
An XG special.
It was going to be a good look, but he didn't get that far from getting that shot off anyway. And that would have been really funny if he had somehow managed to like do what Real Salt Lake did and put that away. Because like, what if they had to call the game after that? Like, what would they have done? Would that
pick up right where you left off? I think is the bit.
They're not going to start it over. They just pick up.
Yeah, pick up from that. So they would have been up 1-0. Okay. Your rosters are locked in. Your personnel that you brought.
So I knew the bit about the rosters. I saw that tweet from Tim Foss of Sounded Heart. Shout out Tim Foss. But I actually wasn't sure if this was a situation where they pick up the game in the 6th minute or whatever, or if they just chalk it and start over. I guess I remember instances in the past where they pick up in whatever minute that they were in, but that was like just such a shit show.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if maybe this was different.
I think this one won't be that bad because it's like 6 minutes, and you know, with stoppage time, and the game will probably end up still being a 90-minute game, if not longer. So, to kick off was pretty funny though. The fact they kicked this off was pretty funny.
It was good content. But anyway, like Raul actually still looks pretty good. If he can keep his hamstring in manageable condition, I think that it's still within a very feasible range of outcomes that he has a bounce back year here and starts to look like the player that we've been used to over the years again, which I don't think he ever has really lost that ability. I don't see him necessarily declining that much. He just can't stay on the field.
Yeah.
But like, honestly, like from what I've seen in the Austin game, and like, I don't want to read like into the Philly chants at all, but I'm just saying like, there's a couple data points now where I'm like, okay, maybe.
I mean, he's been, I mean, we talked about it last game too. It's like, He looks way better than he did for stretches of last season, whether that's just like coming in with a fresh head in mind on the situation. And, you know, but yeah, like one of the things I brought up with Ocean was how many starting minutes, how many, you know, 70, 80 minute like performances, shifts can we expect out of Raul, and him still be healthy?
That's the only question about it to my mind. You never know. But in a theoretical world where he is able to stay healthy, that could solve a lot of problems right there. You know, we might not even need to be talking about Paul Rothrock in that situation if he can start scoring goals consistently again. But I think for now, man, you just have to wait for JP and Rusnak to get healthy and see if that kickstarts things. Because, I mean, I don't think we've talked about this since the last episode, but Pedro de la Vega is out 6 to 8 weeks with a bad hamstring injury. So that's not good. That was the most exciting part of this season, Noah, was getting to watch Pedro de la Vega week in, week out, and seeing how he grew and integrated in with this team and what influence he could have. It was supposed to be the thing that kind of took what had been a struggling attack and elevated it to a contending level in an ideal world. And I feel robbed of getting to see if that would happen. You know, that was the main thing I was excited to watch this season. And now they're going to have to go without him for 2 months. But if you can get Reznak and JP back, I think you can stay afloat. It might not always be pretty on offense. I doubt it will be. But I think you can stay afloat in that 1.4 to 1.5 points per game type of range like they did last year, and then hope that whenever Pedro de la Vega does get healthy, at that point he can offer you that boost. And if you're hoping on contending this year, that's what you need to happen. And a lot of this season really comes down to that. I mean, we talked about it when he signed, right? Like, there's a lot of pressure on this because it's sort of been billed as the difference between contending and not contending, at least, you know, among a lot of the fan base, and in my mind. So we're going to have to see how these next eight weeks go until he gets back. Colorado Rapids up next Saturday at Lumen Field. The squad will be returning home. I can give you guys a little scouting report on the Colorado Rapids because they had some of the most active offseason of any club in MLS. This was one of the worst teams in the league last year. They fired their head coach, Robin Fraser, brought in new head coach, Chris Armas, which was a pretty widely panned hire, I would say, because Chris Armas used to be the coach of the New York Red Bulls and did not have a great deal of success there. But had a very brief tenure as the head coach of Toronto FC that went even worse. So it wasn't like a widely lauded hire, but this is a guy that knows MLS. And from everything I've seen from Rapids beat reporters, he's saying a lot of the right things about connecting with the fan base and supporters in a way that I think a lot of supporters of that club have felt like has been lost in the last few years. So it remains to be seen how much of an on-field effect he can have. But they did do a lot of roster movement over the offseason that got a lot of positive press. They brought in Georgi Mihailovic back from the Eredivisie, who Georgi Mihailovic, when he was with CF Montreal before he got transferred over there, he was looking like one of the best playmakers in the league. So that's not an insignificant signing, nor is the Zach Steffen in goal, who's a former U.S. international goalkeeper. He was our presumed starter for the World Cup for a while before injuries and I think kind of spotty form had him fall off the World Cup roster. But I mean, this is an international caliber goalkeeper. They made a few other moves too. So like, I guess what I'm saying about the Rapids is that they were a trendy pick to be an improved team this year. A lot of the pundits, you know, we love the pundits here. They were talking about how the Colorado Rapids were in for a big bounce back. I wasn't as sure about that, but I could see where they were getting that just based on the amount of moves that were made. I mean, this was a roster overhaul and the types of moves that they made. And Georgi Mihailovic in particular, I think, has shown to be a very good MLS player that you can feasibly build a good MLS attack around. So it didn't look like it to start the season. They lost their first game 4-1, I believe.
It was against Portland, though, to be fair, who's at the top of the table right now.
At Portland.
And
they're also they're coming off a big win, 2-1 at Real Salt Lake, mm-hmm. which is a rivalry game for them, and it's always one of the toughest road venues for anyone to play. Goals from Rafael Navarro, their DP striker, and their homegrown midfielder, Cole Bassett, who they brought back from, I believe he was also in the Eredivisie. He's a homegrown for them. They loaned him out there. It didn't really work out. He came back, but he's another good MLS player. It seems like every time the Colorado Rapids do score a goal, Cole Bassett's like he's got his fingerprints on it, you know? Mm-hmm. And he scored the game winner in this game. So they're going to be riding some good vibes coming into this game. So it might be a seemingly inferior opponent, but Seattle Sounders are going to have their work cut out for them a little bit to score multiple goals in a game, which that's kind of my litmus test right now. Can you score multiple goals in a game at home?
Can you score a goal in the run of play?
You couldn't score a goal at home against Austin FC, who I don't think are any better than the Colorado Rapids. They might not be worse, but
they're probably worse. I think they're probably way worse.
I mean, they probably are. Yeah. But it's a similar quality in a Bonin, I guess, is what I'm saying.
See, I'm not so down on them.
You're not so down on Colorado?
I'm not so down on Colorado, I think, as you are. I think that they made so many changes in the off season that, kind of like we were saying, it's going to take a minute to click, you know? But I think we're seeing, especially in this last game, we're seeing the quality that they can play with, even away. So
okay.
I don't think they're going to have a bad season this year. Maybe they'll finish middle of the table, bottom of the, you know, right on the playoff line. But I don't know. I think the end of this season, if they can get it clicking, they could be a good team. And next year, who knows? Who knows?
Okay.
That's my take.
Yeah. I guess I would qualify myself as still a little skeptical of the Colorado Rapids, but open-minded.
Yeah.
Open-minded. Maybe this Chris Armas thing works out. Maybe Georgi Mihailovic becomes a 10-10 guy. Maybe Zach Steffen is a goalkeeper of the year candidate. Like, these are all things that could happen. And I do think, I definitely don't dispute that there's reason for their club and their fan base to feel like the arrow is pointing more up, certainly than it had been in recent years for them. So I'm happy for them for that. And we'll see what happens next Saturday on can the Seattle Sounders score multiple goals in an MLS game watch on Lobbing Scorchers.
Yeah. And hey, home game, you know what? let's win one, because I keep going to the games with my girlfriend and she keeps saying, why is this team so goddamn boring? I just want to see a goal. And you know what? I'm right there with you.
How about we start with one goal, and then once the first goal happens, see if you can get to two goals.
Yeah. Baby steps. We don't need, it's, you know, no pressure. Just take your time. Just take your time. But don't take too long.
I feel like we're being a little petulant at this point, but probably. You know, I think that's about enough on the Seattle Sounders for this week. Unless you had anything else, Noah, we can dive into some stuff from around the rest of the league.
No, let's get into the real stuff.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. So I think, we're going to keep doing our new little segment, Winners and Losers, where I take a look at a few of the other results around MLS and give you three winners, three losers. So we'll start with the winners section. Noah, Minnesota United.
Woo!
Hottest team in the league right now, I think. 3-2 at Orlando City SC. This was a great game. This was probably my favorite game of the slate. Okay, I'm going to try and get this right. Bongo Hukle Hulongwane with the game winner. He's one of the most fun strikers in the league right now. He's scoring goals for fun for Minnesota United. Very dynamic player. Stoppage time, 96 minute game winner after. So Orlando City had Duncan McGuire scored the tied for the fifth fastest goal in MLS history, like 14 seconds into the match or something.
Yeah.
And then Minnesota United ended up going up 2-1, and then Duncan McGuire got a brace in around like the 83rd minute to tie it. And then Bongo scored at the very end to win it. So just super exciting game, goals going back and forth. But the Loons are flying right now, and their new coach still hasn't even gotten here. He just got to the country, Eric Ramsey from Manchester United a few days ago. And he's coming into some great vibes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know if they needed a new coach. This Cameron Knowles guy seems like he knows what's up.
Yeah, no like, joke.
I think they might have, like, whenever you have an interim coach that has the vibes going like that, I always feel like they should just keep him, you know? That's, I was part of that is because I feel like the Red Bulls did my boy Troy Lesane a little dirty. But Cameron Knowles seems like he's done a good job. But I guess, you know, a lot of that is probably a credit to Minnesota United's front office and scouting department for what looks like a pr- pretty nice roster that they put together. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know.
They look like one of the better teams in the league right now, and they've been playing without a full time coach.
Yeah, I would kill for this roster. I mean, Pookie, you know, Trapp, just everyone, dude. Like, I would kill for
Will Trapp.
Yeah, dude, I'm a Will Trapp fan. Okay, have some respect.
That's fine.
King,
there's
right?
nothing wrong with that. I'm just making sure.
Yeah, Will Trapp. I mean, he played for Columbus. And Inter Miami. He's like always 1 year off winning another ring. You know what I mean? I don't know. I like this club. I like this lineup. I think
the Loons have good vibes right now. They have good vibes. They're in the winner's bracket for the week. Next winner, Portland Timbers. Unfortunately, they have to go in here again. Evander with the game winner at NYCFC.
That was the most heartbreaking thing of the week. That was the most heartbreaking
goal. Like, this was also in second half stoppage time. And Portland was down 1-0 in the 85th minute of this game. Antony scored again. So that's another good thing for them. That guy can't stop scoring. And then in stoppage time, Evander scores. Like, I don't know how he hits these distance goals from these angles. And it doesn't it seem like he only scores this type of goal?
Yeah, it's the only type of goal that he can score, because when
he can't score unless it's the most insane goal you've ever seen.
Yeah. he's a complete bot the rest of the time, but like, you put him 65 yards outside of the box, he's gonna do a bicycle kick and it's
just
gonna
hit a missile
ends.
Right
yeah.
by you. Like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Kick that one out. Like, I don't know. But anyway. The Phil Neville era, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your allegiances, continues to get off to a good start for Portland. They're kind of cooking early in the season, and you know, I'm gonna talk about NYCFC in the losers section, but that stadium is so hard to get road wins at. They have the most infuriating home field advantage in the league. I've been to that field, and the dimensions are such that. It's just so narrow that they're the only team that's used to playing on it. So it just skews everything towards them every game that they play there. Anytime the Sounders play there, I look at as a draw as a victory, essentially. Trying to win there has proven pretty much impossible for most teams in this league since they started to play there. So, I mean, credit to Portland for getting that win. That's a good dub. Can't hate.
They look good too.
They look legitimately good. They're probably going to the playoffs this year. Toronto FC 1-0 over Charlotte FC. So not like the most impressive result of all time, but Lorenzo Insigne with another game winner. He's starting to cook. And I mean, I think this is kind of another repeat of last week's winners, but Toronto FC I think they're defying the pundits right now more than anyone in the league. You know, when we talk about teams that have a right to point to the screenshots, that's always an important storyline to track. Who is delusional when they're pointing at the screenshots, Josh Wolf, and who actually has a right to have a bone to pick with the pundits? Everyone had Toronto FC wooden spooning again. Honestly, myself kind of included. I didn't really see anything different about their roster from the one that won the wooden spoon. Won the wooden spoon, quote unquote. So good job, John Herdman. Honestly, like, this guy's kind of a guru. Like, if you have a club that's in the mud or a national team program, such as Canada, that's in the mud, I guess hire John Herdman, because he'll turn you right around. I don't want to, you know, it's still early. I don't want to call Toronto FC resurrected, but like, you got to give him credit for the start that they've had. They have three straight clean sheets. This is a team that gives out goals for fun. They love handing out goals. The last couple of years, if you needed a goal, you just needed to go hit up Toronto FC and they would give you a few. Like 3-5 in every game that they played. And now they're just ripping off clean sheets like it's nothing. And Lorenzo Insigne is scoring game-winning worldies every week. So what's up with that?
I don't know what's happening up in the north, but honestly, it's kind of sick. I'm not going to lie, because they do have, they have two talented players that
they literally have two talented
they
players.
Have two talented that's players. It's kind of sick. They literally, that's it. They're just, they're cooking with two dudes being guys and smoking ciggies in the locker room.
Yeah. Like two talented players, both of whom drastically underachieved last year, and one of whom was vaping on the plane.
Yeah. One of them has an FAA complaint against
and now
them.
they're both tearing it up this year. Insigne has been scoring the goals, but Bernadeschi is cooking too. Their social team clipped up this one pass he had. It was just like a laser to the left side. It was probably the nicest ball I've seen an MLS player hit this year.
Yeah. So. Well, Italy Junior is cooking over there, so good for them.
For honorable mentions, I've got St. Louis City SC for their 2-2 draw at Austin FC, who have choked away another home lead. Colorado for their 2-1 victory at Real Salt Lake. Good dub for them. And I thought the New York Red Bulls deserved to mention 2-1 over FC Dallas, and Emil Forsberg, their big offseason signing, one goal, one assist. I mean, I'm telling you, this guy is nasty. Like, it was widely acknowledged as a big signing when he got here, but he was balling out in the Bundesliga, like in his prime type stuff. So I saw pretty little reason why he wouldn't come here and do the same. And this game seemed to support that. Yeah, the one goal, one assist, and was pretty much cooking all game, or for at least the portion of the game that I watched. So that would be a big boost for the Red Bulls. They haven't had a feature carry the load, really premier type talent like that in a couple of years. All right, losers for the week. Ooh. NYCFC. This is probably the worst start in the league, you know, for as much as we've complained about how Seattle's offense has looked through their two actual games that they've played, NYCFC's has been worse. You credit to the Timbers, I already gave it, but that was an egregious choke. And Nick Cushing, man, like, he might be on the ropes, because like, it was not supposed to be like this. We had a piece on MLSsoccer.com that had an interview with David Lee, where he was talking about all the young attacking talent that they brought in and how highly rated they were and how it was going to gel, and they were going to be like, it was going to be a new thing this year. Not so far. Like, I don't know. And I think, you know, you always want to see it over a larger sample size, but when you sign these highly rated, like 18, 19 year olds, sometimes you just like, don't know, man. Like, yeah. you are throwing darts. They can have as much pedigree as you think that you want in a player, but they don't always hit. And it feels like what's kind of happening with NYCFC, maybe I'm kind of just speculating from the outside. But they've signed a lot of these like U22 players in the last couple years, and it doesn't seem like a lot of them have hit their ceiling. And when that happens, you can end up in a situation like this. And they have nothing on offense right now.
Yeah, nothing.
Like, if we were an NYCFC podcast, we would be going in on them like even harder than we go in on Seattle.
Yeah, we would be touching the third rail, if you know what I mean.
San Jose Earthquakes, 2-0 loss at home to the Vancouver Whitecaps. So that's a good dub for the Caps, by the way. Yeah. Both of the Cascadia teams, other than Seattle, got big dubs this week.
Hey, Will, we didn't lose or draw, so.
It's true, yeah. You can't really assess whether Seattle
that's what I'm saying.
Should be in the winner or loser section this week, but they did keep a clean sheet.
They did. Six minutes.
Anyway, the Luchi Gonzalez era, this was supposed to be like the year two leap. Not seeing that so far. Like, you got to be able to at least take a point against the Caps at home, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. And then this is probably being petty, but I'm just going to throw LAFC in here. 0-0 at home to Sporting KC, which it's a little misleading. I watched most of this game.
Yeah.
It was one of those 0-0s that was pretty exciting. There was a lot of back and forth action. There was high quality chances, a lot of sequences that could have been goals for both teams. Hugo Lloris, who's already looks like one of the best goalkeepers in the league, made some good saves. So it's probably inaccurate to put them in here, but you still, even with all that said, like, you pretty rarely see LAFC get shut out at home. Like, that just, so anytime I see that, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Really? Like, and it wasn't even snowing.
No, damn. It wasn't even, there was no rain, no snow.
It was in LA.
Yeah.
So.
Against Sporting Kansas City.
Yeah. I guess more than a loser for the week, I was just surprised to see that.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Anyway, that was all I had for that section. Unless you had anything else you wanted to hit on, Noah, I think we might be able to call this one a wrap for the week.
Yeah, I think this was an interesting week in MLS. Definitely not the... I feel like last week cooked a little bit more, but man, I'm just so glad soccer's back. I've been a freak. I've been just laying on my couch for hours watching MLS. It's great
having the games back. The off season is brutal. I agree. It's like, I mean, you know, for me, I'm working the games, but like it's like my ritual, you know. Yeah. I sit down, I get the whip around show, I pick what games I want to watch. If Seattle's playing, I key in on that. And it's just, yeah, I just kind of like drown myself in it, and it allows me to kind of like not think about anything else.
Yeah, you know, it's,
I just like get lost in the little world. So it's, yeah, it's great to have that back. Agreed with that.
Yeah.
On that note, I guess we'll get out of here then. Thank you everyone as always for tuning in, and thanks for bearing with me through this episode as I recover from the flu. I know I might not have been like my normal energetic self on this episode, so appreciate everyone bearing with me through that, but hopefully we still got some good content out for this one. I'd like to think that we did. The novelty of a monsoon game is always going to be fun to talk about, so I enjoyed that.
Absolutely. Give us a rate,
and yeah, like, comment, rate, subscribe. Unfortunately, it's come to my attention that a couple LAFC fans gave us some negative ratings, Noah, which...
Oh, no. What are we going to do?
Fair enough. But, you know, if you want to counteract that and give us some 5 stars, that would be much appreciated. We'll be back in action next week after this Colorado game. Until next time, we out.
Peace.